Hey, Sox fans, welcome to Good Guys Talk Back, a local fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast, hosted by Nick Borowski and Pat Hester.
Hey, Sox fans, welcome back to Good Guys Talk Back. Hey, it's episode 262. I am Nick Borowski. This is a fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast. We welcome you in if you're joining us live on our YouTube channel. We try to do this Sunday nights at 9:15. Obviously, the audio absolutely everywhere. Jump in on the comments. We got a lot to get to here as the Southsiders are scuffling down in Glendale, but there are some positives and the crazy stuff that Pedro says. Going to get into all that and more with my dear friend, diehard Sox fan, Pat Hester. Hello, sir.
Hey, buddy. Hey, if we did, we usually do about 45 minutes to an hour every episode, but give or take. Yeah. If we started right at this moment, is there enough time in the show to get through all of your Pedro quotes that you have? Because I know you've been tweeting a lot about them, pointing them out, highlighting things, circling. You're like John Madden with the Pedro full quote. So if we start right now, would we be able to get through all that you have?
We would barely. Now, we usually spend time and we reflect on some of these profound comments from our fearless leader, Pedro Grifol. So we would have to really limit the time that we talk about each one and break it down.
Okay.
We
wouldn't do it justice if we just rattled off and read everything that was out there said by Pedro. But I think it would be neat. Maybe we save that for a night when we don't have much to talk about. I just let you roll and I just sit back and listen to you read me a bedtime story.
It should be bound. These comments and these quotes should be bound in a leather bound book, and they should give these things out. Maybe at Sox Fest next year. Everybody entering,
great idea.
The thousands and thousands that will enter Sox Fest 2025, they should get a bound book of all of Pedro's comments and quotes. And
not the real leather, though. That would be not good enough for that.
Give me a break.
We're Sox fans.
That's just for the season ticket holders, those precious season ticket holders. Want to say hi to Greg and Sydney and John jumping in the comments. Thank you so much for joining us here. Our White Sox, as we record here on Sunday night, Pat, 3-8 in Cactus League play. Again, there haven't been many games televised, a few on the radio, and you've been able to catch some stuff on MLB, on the app, and you can find ways, we get some highlights and stuff, and there's been some good. There absolutely has been some good. We'll talk about it. There's been some rough play, and, we haven't even seen some guys yet, and some folks that are battling for certain positions, battling for their life. It's been rough, early still, but, rough for some of those guys like Pilar and others. Since the last time we talked, Pat, here are three avenues we can kind of go down right off the bat. One doesn't have a lot of meat on the bone, but Oscar Colas was playing. He was playing first base the other day. He was getting some reps at first base. Mm-hmm. We can explore that a little bit. We could talk about that right out of the gate.
I'm glad you went there because
you didn't even want to hear about the other options.
I really don't. I want to talk about that first, and that needs to be discussed.
Okay.
I need to gather my own thoughts here.
We
seemingly have had for a long time a lot of first base DH type guys, right?
Sure.
Why are we working out a guy that we at one point thought was going to be our starting right fielder for many years to come, giving him an opportunity to work out things at first base when he clearly needs help working things out in right field? I can't get my mind around it. Why we need to press a guy into a position he's not good at? Part of me understands, like, let's get people well-rounded and give us options and things like that. But you have so few options in right field. why would you want to not get that guy as many opportunities and reps in right field as possible?
I don't see, I really don't think it's going to be Oscar Colas in right field at all.
I don't either, but just for the record,
I think Dominic Fletcher is going to be your guy in right field, but I completely get what you're saying. I think we all were scratching our head, and I saw what Merkin put out. There was a justification of, well, he has been taking grounders for a few weeks now. I think he played in Japan at first base. Did I read that correct? So it's, that's kind of the why. Like we shouldn't all be up in a craze because, oh my goodness, what is he doing? Well, he's done it. He's taken grounders and he played in Japan, but still, like, why is he doing any of that right now at first base? I get it. Pedro wants versatility, but that was not something I thought I was going to see this early on. Wasn't it this about this time last year too, where Berger was taking, some stuff at second base?
It could have been. There were some videos in him turning to playing second base, and we started to salivate and thought, well, maybe we could turn Jake Berger into a second baseman. That would be something that would be new. It's befuddling, I guess. I don't understand why you don't give a guy that, again, I don't know that he'll be on this team for much longer. Who knows what his future is going to be like, but I just can't understand why you would take a guy that on opening day last year, Nick, he was your starting right fielder, right? Or was he on opening day, or what? He was
Romy Gonzalez was your opener.
Okay.
I think because of a handsy situation, I think there was probably a lefty on the mound maybe for Houston. So we had to have a right-handed hitter. But Colas got in there in that first series, and he was, they had the banners up along 35th Street kind of well before the announcement. And that was pushed down our throats. Han talked about it, bullish on Oscar Colas. And although a lot of people were saying, hey, he needed a little bit more time, some seasoning in the minors, that wasn't the case. And he looked all of it. This could have been just a, we're going to kind of designate you for assignment. We're going to send you back to the minors. Is there anything you wanted to do in Arizona? Before
we taken ground balls before,
I'd like to maybe get in at first base if you guys don't mind. Can you put me there maybe just for a little bit? Sure, Oscar. Absolutely, we'll give you that chance.
Again, we're going to deploy the multiple people at one position option when we get to Chicago. That's fantastic. We don't have to spend much more time on it. I thought it was so absurd when I saw it that I would love that we started there. So. Back to you.
It's pretty goofy. He's been putting the time in the off season with the bat, worked with a personal hitting coach in the off season to hopefully try to shake him out of whatever funk he had last year. It sounds like Luis Robert Jr. has kind of taken him under his wing, and they've been shadowing, and I'm assuming Robert Jr. has not been shadowing Colas, but more of Colas looking up to Robert. It's something that I was hoping for last year of who was going to help this guy out with Jose Abreu gone, who was going to be the veteran that was going to step up, because you knew he was going to scuffle. You knew he was going to struggle. Mm-hmm. And Grifol didn't do him any favors, throwing him under the bus constantly. Colas didn't help himself out, couldn't hit a cutoff guy to save his life, and how they bounced him back and forth. He should have never started with the big league club, but he did. And now that's what's happening with him. He's taking grounders at first. So we'll see how that plays out. I'm looking forward maybe, next week when I'm down there in sunny Arizona. Love to see me some Oscar Colas at first base.
Please
shots. I cannot wait.
You can like Facebook Live it or whatever people do these days. Yeah. Or, just an impromptu podcast live from the ballpark. You and I we'll just get on.
Oscar Colas at first and footwork and such.
Boots on the ground, Nick Morawski on the scene.
I'll be there. So the other two things that you didn't even want to hear, you want to get right into the Colas stuff.
Now I'll wait. I'll pause after these two things. Now, okay, go ahead.
I didn't hear an and. So starters have been getting starts. Some of our starters that we assume will be around taking the ball once the season opens in late March. They've been getting some playing time and more innings this coming week. And Yoan Moncada and Pedro Grifol, a lot of stuff going on the last couple days. Yoan Moncada wants that two-hole spot in the lineup. He wants to be hitting second. Pedro has got some really interesting thoughts on that spot in the lineup. So we could talk Moncada lineup construction, or we can talk about the starters so far.
Let's leave the starters because I think there's some positive there, and I'd like to spend a healthy amount of time talking about what we've seen from some of our starters this past week. And let's dive right into, you know, trying to transition Yoan Moncada into bunting and sacrificing himself in the lineup.
Hello to Howard and Danny. Thank you so much for jumping in here as we are doing this live on the Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. So, okay. You know, you and I growing up a different time of how the lineup was constructed, the top hitter, the second year, even if you wanted to look, of course, at the 2005 team, Scotty Pods, you got your speed, not a lot of power at all, but you've got your speed, being patient at the top of the order, getting on base is the key. Because you are going to be running, and Tadahito Oguchi in that second spot. And, you know, if you watched a lot in 2005, if you didn't, it was amazing the amount of times that I might not have caught the game right at the beginning, but when I tuned in, they had the lead. The Sox had the lead, and it was usually like 1-0 or something, and it was a run early on because Scotty got on, stole second, and Tadahito Oguchi did what he did so well. He hit it, you know, to right field, and we're on the board. I mean, that's how the makeup was. Get him on, get him over, get him in, Aussie ball. And that has changed, not really with the White Sox and how they do things, but overall in baseball, that has changed. You know, your number two hitter is sometimes now your best hitter. You've got your best hitters one and two, and this has been going on for a while. It's been a trend really over the last, decade, getting your best hitters as many plate appearances as possible, as often. You've got Acuña Jr. Hitting leadoff, Mookie Betts. Christian Yelich, Kyle Schwarber, Springer, Rutschman, all hitting in that leadoff spot. Freddie Freeman hitting second. Mike Trout hits second. Aaron Judge, Corey Seager, Paul Goldschmidt, Julio Rodriguez saw some time in that spot. And Shohei Ohtani, in the spring here, is hitting in the two hole. Juan Soto hitting in the two hole for the Yankees. So Judge will obviously is going to drop probably down to third. So that's kind of like just to give you a taste of what's been happening around in Major League Baseball. So, Moncada has approached, Grifol about, hitting in that two hole. And so this is what Grifol has said about Moncada. It's focus and concentration for him, and that's what we're harping. Everybody knows his ability. I don't have to tell you guys the kind of ability he's got. He can do anything on the field. It's all going to come down to concentration. Well, I would say that also health, the strength of his back and legs and lower body and all that kind of stuff, his oblique, all that obviously plays a big role. So he has expressed, Pat, to Pedro Grifol that he'd like to bat second this season. And this is what Pedro said to Moncada or about that situation. He's one of our best bunters. I'll say that again. He's one of our best bunters. He's one of our best hit and run guys. And everyone knows the ability he has from both sides of the plate. What I did tell him is this: I like consistency in the lineup, even though I'll shake it up this year if I have to. I don't like interrupting the rhythm of the lineup with your main guys. So what does that mean? You got to play. You got to give us games. So he knows it. He wants it. He's got to go get it. I'm not going to hand it to him. So that's a little bit of, some merit stuff. He is going to have to somehow go earn that best hitter on our team, so to speak. Now, I agree with Pedro Grifol. You got to stay healthy, man, because if you want that spot, we need consistency in that spot. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Mankata. If he's right, you know, he can be dangerous. We've seen glimpses, okay? We need to see much more. All of that, Pat, what are your takeaways from it?
Well, I do like the fact that Yoan Moncada wants that spot in the lineup. Because, you know, he's not stupid. He's been around the game for a little bit. He sees the trends. He knows where the best hitters hit. And he would like to think of himself as one of those great hitters. Now, you listed off a lot of, you know, probably the best players in all of baseball. I wouldn't put Yoan Moncada in that same conversation at this point. But we all do know that he does have that, at one point he did anyway, have that potential. I don't know if that's still in him or if there's a possibility there. I would love to see it. I would love to finally, you know, be right on my prediction, which I won't predict this year, of him being the MVP of the team and possibly their best player. I enjoy the fact that Pedro is entertaining the idea, but I just can't wrap my brain around Yoan Moncada getting that second spot when you have an all-star center fielder that's going to be missing out on those opportunities. If it comes down to Yoan Moncada at the end of a game and getting that extra bat when it could go to Luis Robert Jr., I don't know if that's going to be winning baseball, Nick. Now, the plus side is, yes, he's a switch hitter, so it leaves him available for opportunities, and it changes some things in the game, right? I mean, he can certainly handle the bat from the right side or the left side, but I don't know that I really want him bunting a lot, right? Regardless, I've never seen him bunt. Have you ever seen him bunt? I don't recall ever seeing him bunt. He's the best bunter on the team. He's
laid down a bunt, but he must be doing some sort of, there must be some sort of bunting practice going on that is extensive. Like Pedro must be running a whole, you know, backfields over there at the complex for him to come out and say. I love that was the first thing he said, though. You know, like, you know, not that he's got a lot of power to the alleys or, you know, he's dangerous or he's very selective or he's one of our best bunters. Is what I'd like to say about him hitting in that second spot. He's one of our best hit and run guys. Would you say Yoan Moncada is one of your best hit and run guys? I mean,
I'd say, you know what? I'm glad he wants this spot. He's got the potential to be one of the best hitters in all of baseball. And yes, that would mean that he should be up in that high up in the lineup. I'm not one of those people that's going to rage against the bunt when it's there. I think there are still situations in which a sacrifice bunt makes sense. You know, if you're in the extra innings and you've got the ghost runner and you want to move him over, I could see giving up an out there, but the metrics say, and you know, I am not a huge metrics or sabermetrics type guy, but it tells you that it's really stupid to give up outs these days. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to do that. So I just can't understand the thinking that Pedro has right now with talking about Yoan Moncada being one of our best bunters and considering it because of that.
Yeah, that's where it really, that's where I almost had to stop reading it, but I continued for the show, for the sake of the show, Pat, because it just didn't make any sense to me. I mean, two holes should be probably Luis Robert Jr., right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that to me, and the way Eloy Jimenez has been swinging the bat, you know, we'll get to some of his numbers, but he's been a pleasant surprise offensively. And I know he wants to play in 150 games. That's his goal. He, along with Moncada and Luis Robert Jr. Now, What the problem that Pedro is going to have is, you know, if he doesn't want to be moving guys all over the place, it's going to have to be, you know, I've got either faith in Moncada or Moncada, you know, he's been having an okay spring so far. I mean, he came out like, you know, like on fire, but, you know, he's, you know, cooled off and there's still a lot more spring training left, but you know, he's in five games, Moncada is 4-for-12, couple of doubles, one RBI, zero home runs, hitting .333, slugging .500, and has an OPS of .885. So, you know, if you're going to go with a kind of a concrete lineup, you know, and again, things might change. We don't have a huge sample size of Moncada, you know. So maybe it's like what's best on this team. You know, you definitely can't compare yourself with what's going on in the rest of the American League. You really have to look at your lineup. Like, what's the best in this lineup? And how are you going to structure it? I mean, if Aloy continues at the pace that he's going at, which has been really impressive, six games, which is almost halfway home for him. He played in 14 games, maybe 13 the year before. That's about where he's at. So he's almost at that halfway point. So six games, 8 for 17, pair of doubles, six RBIs, 10 total bases, hitting .471, slugging .588 with an OPS over 1,000. That's Aloy Jimenez. So maybe Aloy Jimenez sneaks up in the lineup. But again, if this is Pedro's mentality with how he's going to set the lineup, and he's looking for a guy like Tadahito Oguchi, you know, that can be a great bunter, that can hit guys over for doing hit and run, sacrificing, all that kind of stuff. I, you know, the more we try to get inside the thinking, the baseball thinking of Pedro Grifol, and the more he talks, like, I wonder if reporters are just like, no, that's enough, Pedro. We got it.
We got everything we need.
I'd like to continue on this. I've got more things that I can say in this philosophy. And they're like, no. You don't want to say that stuff. Like, let's end it. We had a good, solid ending. You know, we don't need to say it. No, I've got tons of ideas on things that are that would revolutionize.
We'll talk about on Good Guys Talk Back if I don't continue to speak. You know what? It will be interesting, Nick, to what, you know, he did mention consistency and not wanting to change it up. I mean, this season is going to be what this season is. It's going to be most likely a non-competitive season. And I know managers aren't going to look at that or think about that much. And the players aren't going to play to the way it's like, okay, well, this season doesn't matter anyway. I don't have to try as hard, all that kind of stuff. But do you let a lineup continue to roll because you believe it's the best possible lineup and not have a quick trigger to change it because there's not a lot of pressure to actually win this season?
And that's a really good question. You know, based on what everybody is saying, you know, they're going to say all the right things, this team. And, you know, I think there's belief within the team of why are people sleeping on us? Like, why are we not being given more of a chance? And, you know, I've talked about this with Danny on the Future Sox program, Hot Takes and Heaters, of maybe they have a hot April. Maybe they come out and they play some really exciting baseball in April. I mean, I think it would surprise everybody. Maybe they play pretty well in halfway of May. Can they sustain that kind of stuff? You're talking about some guys that are going to be on this team that, you know, they've been fighting for jobs in this Cactus League, right? Fighting for jobs, fighting for opportunities. And maybe once you make the team, maybe you relax a little bit. Maybe you take the foot off the gas. And, you know, we don't have a lot of proven studs on this team that, like, wow, you know, we know what we're going to get out of these guys for 162. We've got a lot of hope, and that's different, and that should be better. And, you know, I think we're going to see a different brand of baseball. We have all that kind of stuff, but there's not a lot of, oh, we just know top to bottom and the depth, it's going to be solid. So he didn't do it last year, Pat, to your original question. Yeah. I mean, Pedro Grifol kept, Tim Anderson where he was forever and would not move him.
And you think there was more of fear of, you know, there's a reason why Tim Anderson isn't on this team anymore. And I think it was a lot, not just because of his performance, because of whatever was going on in that dugout and in that clubhouse, whether it was with Pedro or with the team or whatever it was. Maybe Pedro wasn't willing to stand up to a Tim Anderson, or maybe he looked at Tim as, you know, this is the real leader. He's a leader that I thought I was supposed to have. I can't mess with that because he's the straw that stirs the drink type of guy, like we talked about a lot, and he just never panned out.
I think Pedro Grifol knew early on that he probably didn't have the confidence of these guys. He probably doesn't have a lot of it right now. You know, for you know, we're really talking and what's going on behind the curtains.
and he knew it was shaky. Like, you know, I don't think I've got a lot of trust, and why should they trust him? Like, what has he ever really done? You know, he's got a long baseball resume, but like, come on, concrete in terms of managing, what have you done? Yeah. And he probably figured, if I screw around with this guy, you know, I'm probably going to catch hell, and you know, I'm going to lose everybody at this point then. And I'm going to lose. So what do I have to, you know, I don't have a lot to go on here. I'm just going to keep it. And I'm going to keep doubling down on the fact that Tim Anderson is going to break out of this, that I have faith in Tim Anderson. And that was what he kept playing. He just kept going with that. And I can tell you how many games were lost, but you know, and here we are arguing lineup construction and it's early March, but that matters. If you're going to set your team up for success, and you know, what does a manager actually matter anyways? You know, we can debate that, but you know, if they're setting the lineup, or whoever is setting the lineup, maybe it's not Pedro. Maybe it was never Pedro. Maybe someone else was doing it and he just took the credit. Set your team up for success, you know, with everything that you have to work with and how modern baseball is going, and know your team really well and what type of game you want to play. Now, that's up to Pedro and the staff, if that's the type of way they want to look at the two spot in the lineup. You know, I'm going to try not to read too much into it, but the more he says lately, I'm just like, man, I can't believe this guy's still the manager of the White Sox. I really can't.
It is something. And I just want to go back, and I knew you wanted to transition to other things, but you had mentioned, you know, what if we have a hot April? Well, you're going to have, this is the time where you lean into that. It's a good thing that we play in the Central, because you're basically playing your division. And outside of that, you don't have a lot of winnable games, Nick. You've got Atlanta, Cincinnati, Philadelphia, Tampa Bay. Outside of your division, basically, you're playing. So you better take care of business. If you're all this, you know, this whole offseason, all I heard was, it's a good thing that we're playing in, you know, we play in the Central, and it's anybody's division in the Central. Well, you're getting a lot of the Central, and outside of that, you're getting premium teams, you know, teams that are probably going to be fighting, if not winning their division, or, you know, in the playoffs this coming year, with stars all over the place in Atlanta and Philadelphia. Tampa Bay is always going to be tough. You know, we saw that last year in April. We got Tampa Bay twice in April, if memory serves. And I think we went 1-6 against them last year. So you better pony up and play well against the Clevelands and the Detroits and the Kansas Cities and everybody else that's in our division.
So, you know, that's a great point. And they count just as much as they count at the end of the season. We talk about this every year, as I'm sure you folks talk with other Sox fans at the beginning of the year. The games that slip away, those games that you beat yourself, you lose those games, they add up. And you'll say to yourself, man, if we just played a better brand of baseball in April and May, we'd be in a different situation than we are right now in July or August or whatever it may be. And that was some rough start to the season last year. They just couldn't get it back on track, and you know, the rest is history. So just trying to put a cap on this whole Moncada two spot. Again, I agree with you. I love that he's aggressive. You know, he's passionate about that. I don't know if he fits in that spot right now. We'll see how things, you know, go the rest of spring. But all those names that I mentioned, you know, and how lineups are constructed throughout Major League Baseball, like those names, and it's tough to compare Moncada to those names. Those names are elite in all of baseball. He's not in that company. He could be, you know, if things have gone differently, and you know, maybe he does have a lot of baseball left in his career. He stays healthy and so forth. But those are danger guys that I was reading off. Robert was a danger guy last year. Frank Thomas, when we were growing up, that was Mr. Danger with an exclamation mark. That was a guy that when you saw that guy come up, you were so scared to make a mistake. You would pitch around him. And he just would eat your lunch because they lived off mistakes, you know, and it made everybody else better in that lineup. And that's what I wanted to see for so long, as so many people wanted to see, is just danger guys in this lineup, you know, from Moncada to Aloy to Robert and so on. And we just don't have that. You know, Luis Robert Jr. is our danger guy. Right now, Aloy Jimenez looks pretty locked in and dialed in spring. But I wouldn't call Moncada a danger guy right now.
No, not at this point. Maybe he was in 2019 and on the, you know, on the rise, and as he was that year and into 2020, maybe. But he just hasn't been the guy that we had hoped that we would get. And then as far as Aloy goes, it's fantastic that he's having the spring that he's having. I, you know, just watch out for any cracks in the sidewalk. I hope that there's no, you know, low ceilings anywhere that he's going to bump his head or something. I just worry that he's going to take a stumble somewhere.
With Colas playing first, I joked around that, you know, maybe just, you know, people do whatever they want. You know, if somebody wants to play a certain position this year, maybe that's the year for it. If Aloy's going to continue to hit like this, I would say no to him. If he wants to be a catcher for a game or something, I'd say no. There's only certain guys that get to live those fantasies right now. We like what you're doing. You know, stick what you're doing. Stay the course, sir. We need you in that DH spot if you're hitting like this.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That'd be fun, though, if you could pick your spot. You show up to the ballpark, and if you get there first, you get to write your name on the lineup and where you go and what position you play. That's fantastic.
So, you know, so I think Greg was in the chats first here tonight for our live episode here. He probably should have been able to pick the topic. You know, you pick, Greg, what you want to hear from us first. I bet you he would have picked Colas too, knowing Greg.
You think so?
I'm sure he wouldn't want to talk about him.
That's something we can do next week, Nick. We could allow the first person that comes in to pick the topic.
Yeah.
And we just go with it.
Yeah. And maybe that's like Mendick was pitching, you know, and that's something that's on the agenda, because maybe he was. Maybe Danny Mendick was pitching this week. We'll see. Speaking of pitching, we saw some of our starters that we think will be in the starting rotation. They got some time. And that's been exciting, Pat. Yeah, this is some fun stuff to talk about. Mm-hmm. We saw Dylan Cease get some action, Fetty, Kopech, and Crochet. I want to start with Crochet.
Yeah.
And this was fun for him. He had a fun week.
Yeah.
He had a week that this is something to build off of. And it all started against the Dodgers in his debut against Shohei Ohtani, which is making his debut, and a dangerous Dodgers lineup. Mm-hmm. Crochet went an inning and two thirds that game, looked solid, man. He looked like he had the velocity. Again, the adrenaline was probably pumping a million miles per hour. It was a short outing, but he gave it, man. He took care of Ohtani, lit him up 100 miles per hour. He rode the elevator, which I talk about a lot, especially when I was doing lockdown shows and I was breaking down pitching stuff. You know, changing the eye level is so critical. Giolito had problems with it. Kopech has had problems with it. And you get into this groove, and I don't know if it's a lack of confidence or just simply you can't locate, and your velocity isn't there. You know, Giolito's fell off. Kopech was nowhere near what we wanted him to be. And when you're grooving it in and you're not changing the location, Lance Lynn had problems with this too. I mean, guys are going to tee off. They're absolutely going to tee off. You've got to change things up, especially when you're at 0-2, you know, change things up. So Crochet was doing that. Yeah, he was pitching really well to the top of the strike zone, which I liked. And, you know, he pitched effectively there. And that's a huge confidence boost. That is huge to have that type of outing against the Dodgers, especially against Ohtani. You know, you want to be in the starting rotation. You've talked it up. We know the history with the injuries and everything. You know what, you finally want to show what you can do. And that was your debut. It looked good. Well, then here he is, you know, pitched against the Angels just on Sunday here, two more scoreless innings. So altogether, his two outings, 3 2/3, 5 strikeouts, 2 hits, 0 walks, 0 runs, and he struck out Trout today. So he struck out Ohtani and Trout. It's a pretty nice spring so far.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, now's the time that you and I look at the odds on him for winning the Cy Young. I think we get some great value right now. You know, we have to, I think, temper our excitement a little bit, but it's a positive start for him. He would fill, obviously, a much needed role in the starting staff in terms of a left-handed starter. It was, for me, nice, and you talked about, and I think I agree 100%, the changing eye level and all that stuff, but when you're pumping it, like he looked like he was, and I don't know what he, you know, what he was topping out at, you know, velocity wise, but it looked like he had a lot of life on the fastball. It looked like he had a great control. He looked like the guy that came up that we saw, you know, in that short stint, you know, right at the end of the season in 2020. It was exciting to see and fun to watch. And it looked electric. So, you know, how long will it last in terms of, you know, what was his high watermark for innings, 77 innings in a year. And he hasn't had a lot of baseball under his belt in his career, right? Cause he didn't start pitching until he was a late bloomer, really, in terms of when he started playing baseball. So, you know, this is going to be some new territory for him if he is a starter and how long he can go and how they look to stretch him out over the rest of the spring and how long can he go when he starts a game. Is it 5 innings at the most? Is it, and you know, so it'll be interesting. But again, I was very pleased with what I saw. That aside from the names on the back of the jersey that are hard to see, that of the guys he did strike out, you know, that very positive. So I'll take it. Right, we don't have a lot of positives to talk about. The 3-8 record, obviously, a lot of great things to talk about with what's some starting pitching that. You know, I'm not going to say it's going to round into form and be this way all year, but so far, so good.
Yeah, so far, so good. Fetty threw 2 innings, 4 hits, a walk, 3 strikeouts, 1 earned run. I figure he's going to be, you know, in the starting rotation. Michael Kopech saw some action. A little shaky at the beginning, which is nothing unusual for a Kopech outing, but he settled down, which is, again, my point with the bullpen stuff. I know everybody with, you know, he's got electric stuff at times, his velocity and everything. He can only pitch in short spurts. But he's also a guy that I feel like needs that first inning almost, or the first few batters out of the way, and then he settles down. You don't have that luxury when you're coming out of the bullpen. Unless you're always going to give him a clean inning, nobody on, and maybe we have the lead and say, have at it, guy. Eat up some innings for us. You know, he comes in with guys on, and he has just no wiggle room. He doesn't have the ability to settle into something, and he spoke about it. Granted, it was his first outing of the spring, and there were some nerves, and the plate was jumping a little bit for him. But he went 45 pitches, 24 of them were strikes, 5 strikeouts, 6 full counts, which is a problem, but only 1 walk. Faced 8 batters, 0 hits, 0 runs. Now, Kopech is going to go again on Wednesday against the Dodgers, which I'll be excited to see. But I was watching that Kopech start, and, you know, he's got some nasty stuff when he can control it. You know, he talked a lot this past week about, you know, overcoming some mental stuff and getting his life, his personal right life and his family and what he personally has done in his life. And, you know, he just wants it. You know, he's overcome so much. And I know it's like, well, what are we going to see from Kopech? Is it the same old, or is it absolutely going to unlock? And at the beginning of that start, it's like, yeah, here we go again. But then you see those moments where he can kind of, it just comes together and he can harness it. Again, early, small sample size. We'll see what happens on Wednesday against the Dodgers. But Kopech, you know, Kopech's going to be in the starting rotation, I believe.
Yeah, I think he will too, Nick. And I think, again, some positive stuff. The pitch count, obviously, a little high, going full as many times as you said he did. Control will always be the issue for him right now. If he can, he does have a fantastic rising fastball. That's, I think, where he needs to live, but he gets underneath it a little bit too much. And then it's not a competitive pitch and nobody's swinging it anyway. If he can get it to the point where it starts in the zone and rises up, you know, above the belt, he's going to get a lot of swing and miss right there, Nick.
Yeah, he's kind of on a two-pitch program. You know, developing that changeup has been an issue of him for a while. Confidence in the changeup. So if he can get those three pitches and he can find the strike zone regularly and not have that bummer of a first inning where, you know, he leaves a lot of guys on, he's exhausted, he throws a lot of pitches, he's rattled. Oh, it's going to be a whole different situation for him. That's a big if. That's a big if. Cease also threw two innings, two hits, one strikeout, zero runs. Now Cease is like, this is like the greatest spring for him. He's feeling great. All the distractions are, you know, he's not even thinking about all the trade stuff. This is something that he said. I took note of. I'm really excited for this rotation. A lot of people are sleeping on us. You see how the ball is coming out of Michael's hand right now. Garrett is nasty. Fetty is super nasty. He locates well. This team has a ton of potential. We're being slept on for sure. This is the best I've been in spring training, and I don't know how long. How about that?
Wow. Interesting. I mean, he did have a pretty awful spring, if memory serves, last year.
Yeah.
And it was all, well, you know, he's working on stuff. You can't really take too much out of spring training. It's guys getting work in. Don't worry about it. He'll turn it on. And he did for game one of last year. And then after that, it was really just pretty mediocre for the most part, aside from a couple good starts here or there. So, hey, that's all great. That's wonderful. Make it a hard decision come trade deadline with this starting staff. If this is the identity of the team, and I think you and I would be pleasantly surprised if this starting staff was something to write home about, right, Nick? Then make it hard on the front office to make that decision and trade them. If somehow, some way, by hook or by crook, you are holding on and being competitive in this division, and it's because of your starting staff, that would be great, you know, to have a first half where you're looking at this and going, we can't break up this starting staff because it's so good. Now, maybe I'm putting the cart before the horse just a little bit.
No. I like this positivity. Positive Pat, you know me. Here we go.
Positive Pat, here we go. Look out. It's happening. It's nice to see him having a good spring. He does look, you know, every time you see him, whether he's interrupting an interview that Chuck's trying to do, looks very relaxed, looks very like at peace with who he is right now. And kind of like this, I'm going to have fun with it and I'm going to get some good work in and we'll see what happens. You know, I can't control the rumors and what could happen with my future.
I think Ken Rosenthal said something, maybe 5-6 days ago about, you know, how there's a lot of positivity in the camp. You know, there's positivity, which there should be. It's the beginning of camp. You're in Arizona. You know, there hasn't been baseball, you know, in a long, long time. It's fresh starts for a lot of these guys. And there are no expectations. Everybody is sleeping on the Chicago White Sox. They are.
Everybody. So they've got person in the world is
not every single person. I have heard some people say that 81-81 is a possibility.
Wait a minute. Stop the press. Who is that?
I'm not going to name names. There's people out there that, you know, you think how you want to think. I'm not going to out anybody for being super positive at a 500 record. If that's how you're feeling right now.
You're not even, you know, son, a little boy.
My son who can't even put sentences together. This is his first.
But he's predicting. He's predicting an 81. That's fine. Hey, he's a kid. Yeah. I that's sure. Great. Good for him.
But you know, you're supposed to have that right now, right? Like, and maybe that catches on, and maybe there is a chance. You know, I'm trying to talk myself into that, but I think the thing that you were mentioning, I think is tangible, is realistic. If this starting staff can really unlock some stuff and they've got the health and they've got the endurance. Yeah. I mean, there could be some fun baseball for a little while, you know, but you got, who's your fifth? Cease in that whole positive quote there didn't say anything about flexing. I didn't hear flexing hasn't even pitched yet. In the spring, is Soraka, you know, your fifth. I think he's going early this week. Is Tukey, you know, Tukey, you know, started quite a bit last year. He got lit up, you know, in his first spring outing, which again, small sample size, but it, you know, depends on what they're looking at.
Yeah. And it is funny that he didn't mention, you know, anybody else outside of the four guys he did mention. But again, whoever it might be, your fifth starter is your fifth starter. And quite honestly, Nick, in a baseball season, you're going to probably have nine guys start at some point because of injuries, because of other things. So it's going to be more than just five guys. But if pitching can be an identity, that would be fantastic. I would love to have just say, listen, this team isn't going to really score a lot of runs. They're going to have a big gaping chasm at 7, 8, 9 in their lineup. But you know what? When you go and you play the Chicago White Sox and you know they're starting staff, you are in for it for a game, yeah, right?
That would be nice. I go back to the chasm.
Yeah,
like that would be the. I just would love to sit in on those hitter meetings with the opposition and the, you know, Cleveland's going through. This is what you're going to see here from the White Sox, and then there's this big chasm here, 7, 8, 9, that you could pretty much just roll the ball in or just lob it. We shouldn't expect any problems because of that chasm that they have. That I hope they talk about it, and I hope they're wrong. I hope they're sleeping on the chasm.
I think they talk to some of the guys in the outfield, say, "Hey, when this spot comes up, if everybody is coming for a water break, come on in. You know, you should be fine. If there's just two or one guy,
you
want to
interact with fans a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, that'd be kind of a fun promotion.
Get a snack, whatever you need to do. Some goldfish crackers are a great snack.
Get your electrolytes up. It's the chasm. So just easy, everybody out there. Just nobody hurt yourself. You know, you got Jordan Leisure, who's been impressive too. Nestrini. You know, Schulten's went down with Tommy John, which I thought he was going to be. I mean, we joked at the end of last season that he could be in the rotation. I thought he was going to be long relief. They've been having a lot of arm problems right now, which is typical. But some of the, you know, stuff like Tommy John is who's next. So maybe Flexen does go to the bullpen and long relief spots. I don't know. Maybe Crochet falls off and it's just like, hey, I'm out. I struck out Otani and Trout. You know, that's it for me. I'll just go to the bullpen now. I'll just, you know what? That's all I needed. That's all I needed to do. So, you know, I think there's some excitement. Again, can these arms do it for the long haul? You know, Danny mentioned in the chat the potential. I think based off of Cease's quote, potential. On paper, yeah, there's a lot of excitement from what Fetty brings and what Kopech could unleash. And Cease is really auditioning, isn't he? He's really auditioning. He knows it. He is going to be under the spotlight every start. You know, on and on. So that is warm to think about, Pat. That is warm that the pitching could hold up for a little while. You know, the offense is definitely questionable. Scott Merkin came out with a very, very early list. I don't know if you saw it, Pat, or anybody else listening here to the podcast. And just the battles that are going on. There's a lot of locks. I mean, you know, from DeJong to Lopez, I think Maldonado and Stassi, those are pretty obvious. But he was looking at the bench and utility, and these are the names that I believe he's predicted: Kevin Pillar, Danny Mendick, and Mike Moustakas. And this is his write up here. The utility infield spot features a tussle between Schumach, Lenin Sosa, Popeye Rodriguez, and non-roster invitees Mendick and Remillard. At the end of the day, it's probably not going to be who had the best stats in the spring, said our fearless leader, Pedro Grifol. It's going to be who helps us win many different ways off the bench.
Wait a minute. Wouldn't the stats directly impact to who is helping you win?
Look, man, I'm just reading the quote. This is again.
I know
this
you
is
just work here.
The more I read some of this stuff, and try to actually make sense of it,
It may not be the best players. It's going to be who helps us win. All right.
All those intangibles, you know, who had the best pep talk in the fifth inning, you know, who was really up at that top step, you know, into the game, who was right in my hip, you know, asking me what I would do in this situation, who was trying to steal maybe the other team's signs, all that, you know, it's just, it's kind of funny. Now he kind of operated this way last year. I remember him talking about this kind of stuff, but at the end, Hanser Alberto won that from, I would assume, Lurie Garcia and super utility. You know, Hanser Alberto had the stats. He also could do a bunch of different things that, you know, Pedro's big on versatility, but Lurie Garcia could do all of that too, I guess. And it just came down, I think, to stats. So maybe this year he's like, you know, I'm not going to pay attention to stats. I don't even want to know. I'm just going to pick a guy that I kind of like and that I'm familiar with, which is why, you know, people are going to sound, this is crazy, but that's why I think Mike Moustakas has a chance, because how familiar he is with Grifol and Vis-a-vis. All these guys, Pilar, Mendick, Moustakas, they have horrible numbers right now. Deloach, horrible. I mean, minuscule stuff. Again, fairly small sample size, but you don't have a big sample size to work with in the Cactus League. Whatever time you have to make the most of it. So maybe Grifol is going to be like, well, you know, if everything's equal, Moose Man, I know what he can bring. He's got some, you know, some TWT, some fire. I don't know.
I would love that to be how he announces it. Moose Man's in. Mustache guy. No, I don't have any room for you. Sorry. Love you, mean it.
You know, Gavin Sheets, he had a couple home runs this past week.
Yes, and he did.
It sure seems like the legend, Jim Thome, has got something to say about that. I feel like White he's Sox coaching legend, him up. White Sox legend.
Don't forget the White Sox part of it.
White Sox legend.
Peoria's favorite son.
Yeah, he's Thome. Really – he's been talking to Sheets. Sheets, I think, has unlocked some stuff. And so – you know, and now Gavin Sheets is probably like palms up. Like, what's going on here? Kolas is taking grounders at first. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, what's going on here?
If Gavin Sheets could turn into half the player that Jim Thome was, that would be a win for us.
Half, right? An eighth. I would say, I would say an eighth. Give me an eighth of Jim Thome.
I think he is an eighth of Jim Thome right
really?
Now.
Really? I don't think so.
I don't know. I wasn't very good at math, though. You were. I don't even know.
Maybe
I don't even know what an eighth would be.
Well, it's a half of a fourth. So
can you move on? Just right. Next.
Let me just read another Pedro quote and just yes, settle your
brain. That will make me feel much better. Things will become clear again. And yes, I can't wait to hear the next thing.
Well, all I'm saying is, you know, nobody's winning any battle right now. So that's TBD. I think your takeaways are the pitching has been pretty exciting to watch so far, especially the starters. I was pleasantly surprised at what I've seen out of Crochet. You know, Eloy seems healthy. He seems happy. And, you know, he's really hitting the ball right now. I love that. I love that for him. And, you know, again, I want the drive from Moncada. We all do. You know, we've been waiting to see what, you know, he can bring to the table for a long, long time consistently. And if he is healthy, you know, and everybody's healthy, right? But if he truly is healthy deep down, man, and he's not just putting on a front, just try to grind through stuff. If he really is, then we'll see it. It'll show because I do think he has that talent. Whatever lingering stuff has been going on truly has hampered him.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Again, there are outside of all the things that we've talked about that are negative and the, you know, the laughable nature that is guys trying to make these last couple spots and fighting out for things. You do have, again, if things could ever go our way and people do stay healthy and live up to potential that we've all looked at, there are some bright spots on this team, Nick. There is bright stuff, obviously, in Luis Robert Jr., there is opportunity and bright things that could happen with Aloy. I do, you know, it's interesting. Did Aloy really say that he wanted to lead the American League in home runs? He wanted to be the home run king. Is that right?
No, you know what? I didn't hear him say specifically that.
But, okay. But, you know, that's a positive. He could be a potential, you know, leading the league in home runs type of guy if he was healthy. So, and we talked about some things in the pitching staff that there could be some potential positivity in. It would be nice. It would probably be out of the realm of possibility because not all things go your way all the time, but it seems like so much has been against us for so long. And it really hasn't been that long. It's really been a 2-year stretch where nothing seems to have gone right for this team. It would be nice for things to just kind of right themselves in the universe, right? Where guys do stay healthy, where guys do just play, you know, the game the way that we would expect them to play, and they don't shoot themselves in the foot on a night in and night out basis. It maybe that could happen, and maybe that's enough to get to be 500. I don't know. They don't have enough star power on this team to be able to go much more than that. But there's opportunity here, Nick, where there's some positive things that could come out of this season. But I digress.
You know, I get what you're saying. I do. You know, who knows? Maybe Aloy goes off and he just leans into the DH. Whatever he did, you know, in terms of his stance, which is a little different. He likes that. That's consistent. He's healthy. And maybe he sticks around as a future DH. You know, maybe they signed him and they said, you know what, we need you here. You know, I think we figured something out finally. I don't know, but that would be fun. You know, if Luis Robert Jr. lives up to what he did last year, Aloy and him, maybe Aloy and him are vying for the AL home run crown. Wouldn't that be something?
Now we're getting into prediction time, Nick.
Well, we're a few weeks away from that, but you know, but to your health point, I think that's, you know, when we do predictions and we do all of this stuff, like, man, I don't know, but what I want to see is, because I feel like we're playing for the future, not necessarily this year. What I want to see is just guys that might be on this team next year and beyond. I want them to be healthy and I want to see what they can do. And maybe even guys that they might not come back next year, like a Yoan Moncada, at least stay healthy. I'd love to see what you can do healthy. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's not what we all anticipate, but at least you're healthy to show us.
Yeah.
You know, and that goes for Crochet and Kopech and so many others. Like, I don't know what those stats and those numbers are going to look like, but how great would it be if we didn't have all of these injuries and we just stayed relatively healthy?
Well, your lips to God's ears, my friend.
All right. How about it's time for Pedro Grifol quote of the week? What do you think?
I don't know if we've left enough time, but I'd love to hear it.
Okay, we've got a couple here. I'll just bunch them into one. So this is, you know, we've given you a lot of Pedro Grifol this entire episode. We tend to do that, but we saved some of the better things for the last segment here. Pedro Grifol quote of the week: pressure is not just speed. Pressure is playing fearless, playing really, really, really aggressive. There's a certain way we want to do things and a certain style of play we want to see. That's where we are at. I've said this before. The train is leaving the station. You either are on it or you are not. This is how we do things. You know, it's always great to be forward thinking and using a train reference. But also I still don't understand what he's talking about when it comes to, like, there's a certain way we want to do things and a certain style. Like, what is that? He's never really,
really, really, really, really, really, really aggressive, Nick.
I mean, he says these things, but it's also vague. Like, what are you exactly talking about? I want someone of him to follow up on, like, what is that style of play? You know, what are the things that you want to do? You know, and then it's like, that's where we're at. It's like, so you're at a land of you know, just being trying to like indefinable qualities. Like that's where you're at. Like you're in, you know, question mark world, you know?
Yeah, I just picture them all walking around like super aggressive all the time, like eating lunch, rawr, aggressive all the time, really aggressive. And I better get this done faster than miss the train.
But see, you don't want to be too aggressive, because didn't Oscar Colas get yelled at last year because he was like, he had the boombox up too much in terms of his playing style? You know, he was too aggressive. So maybe he went beyond the really, really, really. He went to like, you know, to goofy aggressive.
Just a whirling dervish that couldn't be controlled. Yes, that's where he was at.
Yeah. We have fun with this gentleman, but he is the manager. This is what we have. And he's, I believe, got it one more year after this year on the contract. I think he thinks he knows what he's talking about. I don't really know. I don't think it's clear, but hopefully some of that will materialize in the next few weeks and beyond.
Maybe if Jerry gets $1 billion, he can find a way to, you know, get Pedro out of his contract and just pay him off.
Yeah. I don't think Jerry is too concerned about what's happening on the field right now at all.
Never.
No, not that he has been in quite some time, but it is bigger stuff happening for him. That's for sure. So
no, why would you start now? It's only been 40 years.
Pat, always a pleasure, buddy. This has been great.
Hey, Nick, I'm sure you're going to put some stuff out. We'll probably have to shift next week's show. Yeah. Just so everybody knows, Nick will be boots on the ground in Arizona, getting all the juicy details.
Yeah.
Figuring out who's going to be picking up those last couple spots and how the wars are going in terms of positions and how's Moose loose on the town. Maybe find him out, have a dinner with him. Anyway, that being said, we'll probably be recording next Saturday morning at 9 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
9:30, I think is what we said. So 9:30 next Saturday morning, if you want to catch us live on YouTube, or you can always listen later and anywhere you get your podcast. But because Nick will be out at vacationing and enjoying himself, we're going to shift a little bit next week.
Yeah, we're going to shift. We'll do, I think, Saturday morning, March 9th, breakfast with Good Guys Talk Back. We've had one of those before, and it's a great way to start the day. And again, if you miss, you know, the live YouTube show, you just head on over, man. Subscribe to the Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. You can catch all of the shows. They're all you know, archived and cataloged there for you right there on the channel. And of course, the audio absolutely everywhere you find your podcast. So thank you so much to everybody jumping in the comments, in the chat. It's been great. You know, we do it because we absolutely love the White Sox. You know, there's no other way about it. And we know we're not the only ones. And there's so many of us out there. And, you know, there's a lot of White Sox content, you know. And so for you folks to, give us your time and energy. We appreciate that. So pass this along to other Sox fans in your life. We are on Twitter X at Good Guys TV. We've got a Facebook fan page. For Pat Hester, I am Nick Morawski. Until next time, go Sox.